So remember, as we go through this, you have to keep in mind, and tonight we're going to see a real huge example of it, that the purpose of everything in the scriptures is to point to Jesus, to point to the cross. Because that's what it's about. The cross is the center of everything, the center of salvation history. So through these five books of the Torah, and then of course later with the prophets and everything else, the wisdom literature, everything points to Jesus. And, you know, even if you read through the Psalms, you see so many prophecies in there. Most people don't think of David as a prophet, but there's a lot of prophecy in there. Because everything is about him. As he told the Pharisees, you search the scrolls for eternal life, or the scrolls are about me. That made them mad, but the scrolls are about him. Because that's what it's all about. Because without Jesus, there's no salvation. And without Jesus, it's impossible for anybody to go to heaven. And that's the plan of salvation. So last time we got into, maybe we were talking about Abraham the last couple of weeks, because Abraham's the beginning of the people. Messiah, Jesus, has to come from someplace, has to come from humanity. His body's not just created. It's not just made like an illusion. So it looks like he has a body. He has a real body with real biology. You know, he bleeds, he gets tired, he has to eat. He says, I've had enough for today. I gotta go rest now. You know, God doesn't have to rest, but human Jesus has to rest. So human in all things but sin. You know, Paul later is going to write, he's like us in all things but sin. Same body. You know, if you and Jesus were walking down one of those paths and you both tripped over something and you started going, ow, my knee, he would say, oh, my knee, because he'd have the same pain you had. Because he has the same kind of a body. So in order to have biology, you have to come from somewhere, like we all came from somewhere. Right? Like our ancestors were wandering around in Europe somewhere, being pagans at this time. But we're here because of them. We have their biology, right? We're not Jews, but, you know, the Jews who are alive today have their biology in the same roots that Jesus had his biology, because they all came from Abraham. So in order to have the Messiah come in a physical form, there has to be a line of human beings. So Abraham starts it off. So remember, in summary, his father was an idol maker. He was a pagan, of course. God called him, made promises to him. Land, descendants, all the earth will be blessed because of you. Right? Then he goes, get up, go to a land I'm going to show you, and he obeys. And it says, he obeyed and it was counted as righteousness. Was Abraham the holiest person who ever lived? No. Was he the smartest? No. Was he the most handsome? No. Just God picked him because he picked him. He can pick whoever he wants. He picked us to be here. You know, we're kind of a sorry bunch. There's nothing special. There's nothing special. There's nothing special about us. We're just card-carrying sinners. Right? We go about our life and we stumble around and we're just card-carrying sinners. But we get picked to do something. So Abraham now, you know, is 99 years old. Now he's 100 years old when Isaac is born. Now last lesson we had the thing where the three angels come and there's this play about one and three, and he and Sarah laugh because, you know, 99-year-olds don't generally have babies. So they thought that was kind of funny. You know, these angels are having some fun with us. Because it sounds pretty weird, doesn't it? And of course, before that, Sarah had tried to rush things along by having Abraham lie with the maid, with the servant girl, and produced Ishmael, who's the father of the Arabs. He's still Abraham's son as well. So, you know, when you think about it, you know, God has an interest in the Arabs, right? It's not like he loves the Jews. He loves all the Gentiles except for the Arabs, because look how much trouble they cause. You know, they're Abraham's children too. More so than we are. More so than we are. Through Ishmael. So, you know, I was reading an interesting book the other night, and one of the chapters was, you know, God's interested in Arab people being saved, because they're basically descended from Abraham, just like the chosen people were. So, you know, I never thought of it that way. That's kind of interesting. So, you know, when you meet an Arab person who's, well, you know, Muslim or, you know, you should say something about God and the Judeo-Christian sense. You should mention Jesus. They know who Jesus is. He's a very important part of the Quran. Mary's a very important part of the Quran. Mary has a whole chapter. The Bible hardly mentions Mary, but there's a whole chapter about her in the Quran. They know who Mary is. So, you know, when you lead with, say, oh, you know, did you ever think Mary, you know, gave birth to Jesus? And you know, they know that already. So that's like sort of a jumping off point rather than starting with, you know, we think Allah is, you guys are all wrong about this Allah thing because you're not going to get anywhere with that. But they're his people too. So now we're going to go to, before we get into, let's go to Genesis 21. And somebody read 1 through 8.
The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And he said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would suckle children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age.
Pretty neat. And we're still laughing, like I said last time. You know, here we are, 4,000 years later, or whatever it is. And whenever when I read that line, I always laugh. You know, we're still laughing about Sarah. So now we've got little Isaac. Now, Isaac is the child of promise. Remember, God said, Ishmael, you know, I love Ishmael, but he's not the promise. The promise is going to come from the child that you have with Sarah, not this other boy. So now here he is. He's Yitzhak. So it says Abraham is 100 years old at the time. So now they got a little bit of a problem, because now you've got Sarah and little baby Isaac, and you got Hagar the servant with sort of, you know, 12-year-old or so Ishmael. 12 or something at this time, right? That's what we figured out. So he's an adolescent, and there's little baby Isaac on the scene now. So there's going to be friction, clearly. So Sarah doesn't like it. And to make a long story short, Hagar and Ishmael have to leave. And they get sent out into the wilderness. See, if you look below that, in verse 10, she demanded of Abraham, drive out that slave and her son. No son of that slave is going to share the inheritance with my son Isaac. So, you know. And as you can imagine, all these people living in the same house would have made for some pretty weird dynamics. Here's the interesting thing. If you go down further, you know, Abraham gives them bread and water, and Hagar takes the child. It says takes her on her back, so I don't know if he's 12. That might be kind of tough. But she goes out into the wilderness, and look how interesting this is. Somebody read 17 through 19.
God heard the boy's voice, and God's angel called to Hagar from heaven. What is the matter, Hagar? Do not fear. God has heard the boy's voice in this plight of his. Get up, lift up the boy, and hold him by the hand, for I will make of him a great nation.
Hmm. Yeah. So Ishmael is going to be father to great nations, too. And look how many nations are Arab nations. Ishmael's the father of all of them. Isaac's the father of not nearly as many people. There's only about, 17, 18 million Jews in the whole world. But there's, a couple hundred million Arabs. So Ishmael actually kind of wins out in terms of numbers.
Ishmael, then, is he mentioned in the Quran?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's the main guy. And in the Quran, Isaac is kind of a small player, of course, because they have to, emphasize the opposite thing. So Ishmael and Hagar go, so now you got the house stable again. But God's going to take care of Ishmael, as you see. He grows, he becomes an expert with the bow, and, he goes off, and then you hear about him off and on throughout the rest of the Torah, but not much. So he's out of the picture now. So you've got Sarah and Isaac, Yitzhak, remember his name, he's laughter, living in the house. Abraham circumcises him on day 8. Now, remember, for those of you that did the Torah class before, the law doesn't come to Moses. This is 400 years before the law. But Abraham knows he has to circumcise him because God told him so. So that part of the law is there, but the formal law is still 400 years in the future. So we don't know maybe if these guys would have had a pork chop once in a while, because the dietary laws weren't there yet. There's a test that comes for Abraham. Now this is where anybody who reads this and thinks about what's going on immediately knows why this is a prefigurement of what's going to happen to Jesus, of what's going to happen to a sacrifice, of what's going to happen to how something or someone has to die for somebody else. It's substitutionary death. And it's such a powerful thing because he has waited all this time for a son. So now at some point, and there's a lot of debate on how old Isaac was when this happened. Some say he was a little boy, some say he was a teenager. I don't know how old he was. A lot of the ancient rabbis say he was probably bar mitzvah age, which is 12 or 13, but I don't know. Nobody knows, it doesn't say. So if you go to chapter 22, somebody start reading from 1. I'm sorry, 22, verse 1.
Sometime after these events, God put Abraham to the test. He called to him, "Abraham, ready." He replied. Then God said, "Take your son Isaac, your only one, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah. There you shall offer him up as a holocaust on a height that I will point out to you." Early the next morning, Abraham saddled his donkey, took with him his son Isaac, and two of his servants as well, and with the wood that he had cut for the holocaust, set out for the place of which God had told him.
Okay, stop there for a minute. Okay, now look, first thing you see is what? God calls out Abraham. And what does Abraham say? What? Leave me alone. He says, ready. When God calls, Abraham's always responding. What? I'm here. What do you want? Like when we studied Samuel, and little Samuel hears God calling, "Samuel, Samuel." And after he gets it, he goes, "Here I am." When Isaiah sees the vision in the temple, God says, "Who should I send?" He goes, "Send me, here I am." is a Hebrew word, hineni, that is this translation here. And hineni means, here I am, what do you want me to do? It's more than just, what do you want, or I'm here. It's like, I'm here and I'm ready to do what you want. So Abraham immediately responds, here I am, I'm ready. See, so when you're following the Lord, God calls out to you to do certain things. You may not hear a voice like this that says, Abraham. You probably won't hear that, but he calls you in different ways. If you're ready and if you're listening, you say, here I am, what do you want me to do? If you're all tuned out, if you're listening to the, you know, the TV and the music and the rat race of the world, he could be calling you, you don't even hear it. You see, he's ready. He responds immediately, here I am. It's hineni. I'm ready to do whatever you want me to do. And it says, take your son, your only son, whom you love. Okay? One son, son who he loves, get ready to do something with him. I'm starting to get where this is going. And I'm going to show you a hill that you're going to go up and you're going to sacrifice him there. Moriah is in Jerusalem. It's the Temple Mount. That's Mount Moriah. The holiest place on earth. Because this is where Abraham and Isaac went. And this is where the temple is built. God says, this is the place where I put my name. So God's name is literally on that mountain. In some very real sense. So you take your only son, the one who you love, and I'm going to take it to a hill I'm going to show you. And he immediately obeys. He gets all the stuff together. He has wood. He has the donkey. And he goes to this place to sacrifice his son. Because God told him to do this. Now, before you get nervous and think that the Bible condones human sacrifice, don't. Okay, now start reading at 4.
On the third day, Abraham got sight of the place from afar. Then he said to his servants, both of you stay here with the donkey while the boy and I go on over yonder. We will worship and then come back to you.
Okay, interesting. God had told him you're going to sacrifice your son in a holocaust. That means you're going to kill him and then you're going to burn him up. Right? But now Abraham says, you guys wait here. We're going to go worship and then we'll be back. So either he thinks, we're not really going to go through with this, or maybe I'm going to kill the boy, but God's going to somehow bring him back to life, but we're going to be back. Now it doesn't sound like Isaac's going to be back. Go ahead.
Thereupon Abraham took the wood for the holocaust and laid it on his son Isaac's shoulders, while he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two walked on together, Isaac spoke to his father Abraham. Father, he said. Yes, son, he replied. Isaac continued, here are the fire and the wood, but where is the sheep for the holocaust? Son, Abraham answered him, God himself will provide the sheep for the holocaust. And the two continued going forward.
Okay, so Isaac's a little worried. He's old enough to say, wait a minute. We got wood. You got a knife. This isn't looking good at this point. But anyway, maybe he's thinking the old man's lost his mind. I mean, who knows? So look at this situation. Isaac carries the wood on his back up the hill. What does that remind you of?
Jesus
carries the wood up the hill. So it's take your son, your only son, the one who you love. God has an only son, the only begotten. We're his adopted sons and daughters. But he has an only begotten son who's the true son. He's gonna carry the wood up the hill. God is allows this to happen to his only son because it's the only means of salvation. There's no other way people can be saved unless you're perfect. There'd be very few people in heaven if the grounds for admission was you had to be perfect. It'd be a pretty empty place. A lot of room to move around. But see, the imagery here is that Isaac becomes a type or a foreshadowing of Jesus. He's the only son. The father loves the son, but the son carries the wood, which is going to be the sacrifice. The wood's to start the fire up the same hill. And when Isaac says, well, where's the sacrifice? What does he say? God will provide the sheep for the Holocaust. God will provide the sacrifice. This is becomes one of God's names. So far we have Creator God, you know, made covenants so far, made some with Noah, made a covenant with Abraham, the dramatic covenant with the animal halves. But so far the only name we have for God in the Bible is Elohim, which is the Creator God. But now God gets another name, which is God will provide. Yahweh Yireh. God will provide. God will provide the sacrifice. Now, why is that important?
Becomes a sacrifice.
Yes, because then he provides Jesus as the sacrifice.
And he's the
Lamb. Right, and he's the Lamb of God. He provides, we're going to see, he provides a lamb that's going to die in place of Isaac. Lamb dies, Isaac lives. God spares the human son, but doesn't spare his own son. Isaac gets to keep his son. The son of the only begotten son is killed in a sacrifice with wood. And he becomes the lamb. So God will provide. Like that one song we always just play at home group about God provides this lamb. Jesus, Yeshua, is the lamb that God provides for the sacrifice. He provides the sacrifice. Jesus becomes the sacrifice. And he also becomes the high priest who does the sacrifice. And instead of doing the lamb on the altar, as we're going to see, the cross becomes the altar. So in the whole dynamic of the crucifixion, Jesus is the priest, he's the victim, and he's on the altar, which is the cross. Here, Isaac figures there's supposed to be a lamb. There's some kind of altar, there's some kind of wood, there's a knife. I mean, he gets the picture, but this is a prefigurement of the cross. Abraham's no idea what's going to happen 400 years later or 1500 years later. He's just obeying. If you'd have been one of the guys with Jesus, if you'd have been Peter, for example, Peter doesn't know what we're going to be doing in 2016. Right? Peter has no way to know that. Peter just knows what's going on right then. Well, and he's looking at this thing going, this looks bad. Well, okay, now somebody start reading at 9.
When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. Next, he bound his son Isaac and put him on top of the wood on the altar. Then Abraham reached out and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham, here I am, he answered. Do not lay your hand on the boy, said the angel. Do not do the least thing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you did not withhold from me your son, your only one.
I remember in the book of Romans, there's the passage that God did not spare his only son. He'll give you what you need. He'll give you what you need, not only to live, but also to thrive and to do his purposes and to have you live your life. If he didn't spare his only son, he'll give you what you need and what you want. That's small potatoes. If you want a Mercedes, he's not going to give you that. If you're going to listen to Joel Osteen and pray for what color Mercedes you want, he's not going to do that. But he's going to provide for you because he didn't spare his only son. Right? If any of us as a human said, you can kill my son if you want, I mean, there would be nothing else. We wouldn't even be able to imagine such a thing. Right? But it says he did not spare his only son. So he'll give you what you want.
And his son obeyed him.
Yeah.
I mean, Isaac.
That's right. That's right.
He took the responsibility.
That's right. Exactly right. And the son obeyed. But here it's, you know, don't harm him. So he spares them. He spares Isaac. But now we still have a situation. There's a sacrifice ready to go. Abraham said, God will provide. Okay, read the rest of that.
Abraham looked up and saw a single ram caught by its horns in the thicket. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering in place of his son. Abraham named that place Yahweh Yireh. Hence, people today say, on the mountain, the Lord will provide.
So he looks, and there's what? A sheep. It's a ram, but it's a sheep. It's a lamb caught in the thicket. And you notice what it says, offered it up as a offering or a holocaust in place of his son. There's a sacrifice is made in the place of somebody else. Jesus says this is sacrificed on the cross instead of me. Instead of any of us. I'm a horrible sinner. I should be the one being killed. He was a perfectly pure, innocent, unblemished, pure God-man, but he died so that I don't have to die. So the ram dies in the place of Isaac. Amazing. See, this is, you know, pretty early on in the Torah, and you already have a picture of the crucifixion. You already have a picture of an only son who's going to be sacrificed. And you already have a picture of a substitution. Somebody dies so you don't have to die. That's wild.
It's probably significant that it's a ram, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's not a female sheep. It's not a you. And then look what happens next. Let's read 15 through 18.
Again, the Lord's messenger called to Abraham from heaven and said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have acted as you did, not withholding from me your beloved son, I will bless you abundantly and make your descendants as countless as the stars of the sky. The sands of the seashore. Your descendants shall take possession of the gates of their enemies. And in your descendants, all the nations of the earth shall find blessing. All this because you obeyed my command.
Whew. So, what does he do? We heard this before. He restates the promises that he made before. Land, descendants, everybody on the earth will be blessed because of you. So here we are, 2016. Blessed because of what Abraham did. Blessed because a lamb died in the place of the boy. Blessed because Jesus the Lamb died in our place. So all the earth is blessed because of what it, because Abraham was the father of all of this. That gets me pretty excited. So the promises are restated. You'll find God restates the promises many times, and then he does it to Isaac, then he does it to Jacob, because, you know, people forget, so he has to keep telling us the promises. So after a while, Abraham probably said, what was that second one again? Oh. So God keeps telling them. We forget stuff. How much stuff do we know we've been promised? Right? Through Christian teaching, through the scriptures, through, but, you know, we don't always think about it. So, oh, yeah, I know all that stuff. But we don't really, because we don't appreciate it. You know, we're more worried about what's my cholesterol going to be tomorrow compared to the fact that we have eternal promises. Cholesterol is irrelevant compared to this. That's going to be for just a short time. So it's a substitutionary death. So now basically, biology starts to catch up with these people. Because Sarah dies long before Abraham dies. Abraham's one tough old guy, I tell you. He goes on, then he gets another wife, but we're not going to get into that. But you can see there in chapter 23, Sarah lives 127 years. She dies in Hebron. Now, you can't go a week without hearing about Hebron on the news. Hebron is always in the news. They gave it to the Palestinians in the late 90s, but the tomb of the patriarchs is there. So it's holy to the Jews. It's holy to the Muslims because Abraham is there. But they don't care about the Isaac and Jacob. So there's always turmoil there. At the place where Abraham actually is buried, there's a mosque on one side and a synagogue on the other side within the same building. So you can imagine the tension that goes on over there.
Same building.
Same building, yeah. And you see it's a big cube building. If you watch the news, they'll show it all the time. There's been so many shootings and stabbings there. A few years ago, some crazy Israeli guy went in and shot down a bunch of Muslims that were praying. Muslims have been stabbing Jews that have been going in there. I mean, it's a center of conflict, and it's Abraham's tomb, and he's both of their fathers. You know, it really shows you kind of the human condition. And
he's actually buried there?
Yes, he's actually buried there. And you see here, Abraham dies in Hebron. Abraham mourns for her. And he has to bury her somewhere. So he buys a piece of land from somebody, from a Hittite, which is Hebron. He buys a piece of land to bury Sarah at. Isn't that cool? So Sarah dies, gets buried in Hebron. But anyway, so now we got one of the main people, one of the matriarchs, out of the picture. So far we got two patriarchs, because we have Abraham and we have Isaac. Okay? So Sarah lives 127 years. So now Isaac grows up. I see we're going through this, you know. A survey course. We could do all the details, but it's good to know like what happened. We don't have to know like exactly all the details. So now, in order for the promise to go on, Isaac has to get married. Isaac has to have children. Right? Or else, if he's the child of promise and he doesn't have any children, not going to be much of a promise. It's going to end with him. So, somebody start reading this. We're at Genesis 24. Somebody start reading at verse 1.
Abraham had now reached a ripe old age, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. Abraham said to the senior servant of his household, who had charge of all his possessions, "Put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and earth, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not procure a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I live, but that you will go to my own land and to my kindred to get a wife for my son."
Okay, let's stop there. So Abraham wants to find Isaac a wife, but doesn't want her to be from the Canaanites where he's living. He wants somebody from back home. So he makes this servant swear that he's going to find him a wife from back home and not a wife from the place where he is now.